Saturday Market offers handmade art, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at Southwest Ankeny and Nato Parkway in Waterfront Park. Information at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Put the people in my brain, 2 new pens to have a go. I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, my guest is Susan Johnson. Susan's a painter who has specialized in oil bars for the last 20 years, and currently she has a show on at the Waterston Gallery until Sunday, the 29th of December. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
My pleasure.
Susan, you've been using oil bars for a long time. They look like thick crayons, very oily, and you talk about them as though they're paint. You refer to paint. So how do they work?
Well, they are like big fat crayons, but they are made with paint pigments and wax, which makes them go on. An oil bar is a brand name. It's a Winsor & Newton product, one that they have recently changed the consistency of. So I'm going to have to learn over again. But I was introduced to them 20 years ago, and I didn't like them in the beginning. And I have kind of made it my art form. So I love it because when you're painting, you're mixing on a palette, and it's very easy to make mud. And I don't like mud. I like the intense colors of the oil bar.
Mud meaning?
A brown, gray. You know, you're mixing, the colors get too mixed up together. And with the oil bars, the only mixing is when you put one color on top of another color right on the canvas or the whatever surface you're painting on. And you're really drawing. I mean, I draw is really what I do. I design and draw.
So you do a pencil sketch underneath and then fill it in.
That's normally how I work, yes. I do a pencil sketch and then I start to put it on the easel and stand back and look at it and come to some conclusion as to what I should change. And then I also make other changes as it goes on.
There's a piece in the show called Wetland 2, and it's fairly typical of the landscape around Corvallis, where you live.
Yes, there it actually is a wetland, a wetland park near one of our elementary schools. And they actually have a wooden walkway to go through it. And I remember going one Thanksgiving with friends, and it was beautiful there. When I took some photographs, of course, you couldn't really see the water because the grass is very long and had the cattails in it and all of that, and the distant trees and the distant coast range. And I put it together so that there is a box or a window down in the lower front of the picture that shows the water. And then behind that is the whole landscape of the area.
Right.
So it's a combination of the two. And it's something that I have inner windows, or people call them different things, in my work. And it's like you focus on one center part or one, and then something fades away around the outside. And people seem to stop, question, why did she do that? And then they, I think it means that we're losing out on our environment, or depending upon their own concerns or issues, they can interpret it their way, which is what I would really want to happen when you're looking at a work.
And in that piece, the horizon is sort of dark hills, look like the Coast Range.
Right.
And then there's sort of grass. And the, but the this rectangle down the front is like picture in picture on a TV, right? It's come from somewhere else.
Well, it's the same. It's when I look down into the water, mm-hmm. when you're walking across that bridge, you know, in terms of a realistic landscape, you wouldn't see it that way.
Oh, you've tilted it up.
I've tilted it so that it stands out. And so you can see that there is water there, even though it's not as obvious as in the painting.
And it's bright blue.
Yes, yes. It's. I have a preference for very strong colors. I abstract my colors a lot. And I also like strong value changes, darks and lights, contrast, so that that becomes kind of an abstraction of the landscape, if it's a landscape.
What does that mean to abstract your colors?
Well, it's not the color I see when I'm looking at the landscape. It's exaggerated. And so there may be a slight tinge of orange in the field. Well, I make it really orange, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that it and I also simplify the shapes so that you get the general feeling of a shape of the grasslands or the field or the sea. And that gives me a way of responding to it and making it a little more mine.
And you say people look at something and then they come at it with their own story.
That's right. And sometimes this inner window, as a lot of people call it, and it fades out toward the side of the image. And people look at it, and depending upon their own feelings about the landscape, it may be that they're very concerned about are losing the landscape, or maybe they're concerned about the farmlands. And so they notice that that's the part that they respond to. And it's important, I think, to me to be to have people respond in some way to the work.
You told a story about a student who was looking at one of your landscapes. And what was your thought process as you looked at him looking at your work?
Well, I think there were two students that came together, and the young man was particularly dismissive of, oh, it's landscape. and so I went up to talk to him. That's the wonderful thing about being in a co-op. I'm actually there a lot of the times.
At Waterstone.
At Waterstone. And I kind of tried to get him to see more, because there was an old tree, huge, in part of the image. And then in a separate almost window, there was a fireplace and wood burning. And I tried to get him to sort of, well, what does that mean? And it had a lot to do with old age. And he got it. And it surprised him.
Mm-hmm.
And it made him a little more interested in seeing some of the other images and maybe making an interpretation, a personal interpretation of those images, which is what's really important if you're going to see an artwork.
Was he interpreting it for himself, or was he trying to figure out what you were trying to convey?
I think initially it didn't mean a thing to him. And then he started, oh, well, maybe, you know, I don't know whether he saw it the way I saw it, but he did read something into it that was personal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what was important to me.
The texture of these oil bars is quite, when a kid crayons with a wax crayon, like really heavily for a long time, builds up a surface,
right.
Different layers, you can get that effect pretty quickly.
Yes, you can. I mean, it goes on like a rough kid's crayon, but then you're putting another layer near it, on top of it, and it then becomes a little more painterly, although you are drawing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And you may be just swirling around, getting an area filled in and changing the colors in it to give it some value change, some darks and some lights, some three-dimensional quality.
There's one called Stepping Stone, which is pretty abstract. It's a lot of
Yes. Initially, I thought that's really what I wanted to do was abstract work.
What year was that?
That was probably about 18 years ago.
Okay.
19 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. It was an early work, and it had these abstract shapes, one kind of walking on top of another across the picture plane, and there was nothing suggesting a tree or a plant or anything like that. And there was some really kind of fun color mixing in that piece. And I really thought that was a direction I would move into, but I am really taken by my own environment, which mm-hmm. is a beautiful Oregon landscape environment.
What area is it?
We live on the west side of, and I have for 40-some years, on the west side of Corvallis, in the beginning of the Coast Range, out with the turkeys and the deer and all the other wild creatures, including some big cats sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's hilly and firs and oaks and fields, and it's really peaceful and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. What are the little towns around there?
Philomath is next door, sort of further west. Albany is the one that's a little north, northeast of us, but they're all on the west side of the freeway.
Right. So you said you wanted to be an abstract artist, and what happens to you that you're pulled away from abstraction?
I guess one, I think oil bars might have done it for me, because they have a wonderful textural quality that suits landscape, suits the texture of grasses and leaves and that kind of thing. And also, I can't help but love the landscape. And my frequent drives up to Portland, to Waterstone, to work, I often go through a back way where I'm passing farm fields all the way, and the hilly farm fields, and they have great colors, and the color changes in the season, and they have a lot of texture that I like.
And you made a remark that something was pulling you to landscape. You said my age is saying landscape. What does that mean?
Well, I do think that maybe it's, I don't know whether it's my, I mean, it probably is my age. I mean, I have, I graduated from college in 1960, so you can do some arithmetic and see what the age is. But it's been a long time, and I love the land. I love the land of Oregon. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And we came out west for my husband to go to graduate school, and we have lived in Corvallis for 45 or so years, and it's a beautiful place. You know, I think Portland is exciting, but I think the quiet and the subtlety of the landscape is something that's very important to me.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, my guest is Susan Johnson. Susan is a painter who has specialized in oil bars for the last 20 years, and her current show is at the Waterston Gallery until Sunday, the 29th of December. Susan, you, in the show, which is a retrospective, but you have added some recent work. You have a couple of sculptures, wooden sculptures. One is a beautiful kind of pair of...
I don't know. I think of them as figures, but they certainly don't have a figure shape. They have a slightly curved shape, mm-hmm. One taller than the other, and I call it the sculpture back to back.
And this is plywood...
Yes, this is an assignment that I got from from Clint Brown, who was a sculpture professor at OSU, and he said to me, "None of this little stuff, nothing, you know, a foot tall or 6 inches wide or anything like that. This should be. I want you to make something that is 6 feet tall, made with laminated plywood." And fortunately, I have a husband with a wonderful woodworking shop. He did not do the work for me, but when it came time to laminating the plywood, he had the clamps to do it, and he had the tools to so I could, you know, do the job. And I made probably four of these figures. I've sold one of them. The rest, this one that was just described, the two-figure one, was... it's been sitting in my studio for 30 years, I think. And I hang my paint shirts on it. But I decided this time that since this was my final show at Waterstone, I wanted to show a couple of pieces from my older history. And it has surprised a lot of people.
Why is this your last show?
I've been commuting from Corvallis. And I work at the gallery three or four times a month. And I've done the bookkeeping for 18 years for the gallery. The last 2 years, I've been free of it. And I am old enough now that I'm not really happy driving up and down the freeway. It used to be I'd get in the car and I'd be alone. And I loved to be alone for a while. And it was very peaceful. But driving down there is not the same anymore. A lot more traffic. Took me 3 hours to get home one time this summer. So I've decided that I'm not going to do that. And certainly we have three new people at the gallery. So,
But you'll keep on working.
I'll keep on working, yes. I mean, I need that for my own personal sanity, I think. And it's... it's good for me to do that. It stimulates my head and my body.
Mm-hmm. Where's your studio then?
It's attached to the house. It was the guest room when we built the house.
So you got it's a pretty big studio.
It's a nice studio. It really is a good space. Mm-hmm. I'm very lucky. And everything in it, my husband has built all the furniture, all the stacks. So I've had a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. Your husband was an academic at OSU, correct?
Yes.
Before he retired.
Yes, he was a biophysics professor.
But he was also pretty handy.
He loves to work with his hands. The whole family likes to work with their hands. And I think even in his research, he was building equipment and using his hands to figure out how it all worked, so as well as his head.
Right.
So it's got a good head.
You've got this nice sounding studio. What do you listen to while you're working?
I listen to the classical music station out of Eugene because that I get clearly. I love to actually, when I've done the drawing and I'm ready to really put the oil bar on the canvas and move that crayon around, I like to listen to a classical thing, something like Beethoven, and have that affect the way I apply the color.
So let's listen to a clip now from Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, the Eroica. That was Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, the Eroica Symphony. And Susan, why did you choose that?
It has enough motion in it that I can repeat the motion as I move my crayon around my oil bar. It makes it more fun.
So a painter would be, you know, they have this extension of their arm, the paintbrush, but you're working with a very short crayon.
Right.
And how does that affect the way you make marks?
I mean, this is a single line that you're putting on, but then you're putting other lines on top of it and around it, and you can scrape into it, and you're just getting this kind of real immediate response to the movement.
And some of these crayons are very kind of buttery. I mean, they leave a liquid surface, depending on the color, right?
Yeah, it does. They do change according to color. And they've also, Oil Bar, which is a Winsor & Newton product, has changed their formula considerably. And they're no longer providing the little ones that I like to use. And they're softer. That's going to be my challenge over the next few years, is to see how I can use them effectively. They're also several other brands, I'm trying. They're softer too, so I'm going to try and see what I can do with that medium.
One of your pieces has a poppy in it, a bright red poppy. Now, where is that from?
That actually comes from my sister's poppies. My sister and her husband, and with our help too, built a house in North Carolina in a beautiful, beautiful setting, way up in the hills. And in the front, she has a wall, stone wall, and she always had at least one poppy plant there. And then in the back, she had another stone wall, and there was at least one poppy plant there. And when we went to visit, I would always take pictures of those poppies and use them in my work. And they're very special to me now, because about 3 years ago, I lost my sister and she's an identical twin sister, an artist herself. And so they kind of remind me of her, They remind me of her for sure. And I love the intensity of the colors, the contrast between the red and the green. Mm-hmm. And so they're very special.
That's the kind of thing you just painted for yourself?
I really did. I had it out at the Fried Gallery in Lincoln City. And when I collected some work there, they wanted to keep that one. But I said, no, that's gone home with me.
And she was an artist, too?
She was a graphic trained as a graphic designer. And so she actually earned a living doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think when they retired, her art form was her garden.
Was there much overlap in your styles, being identical twins, you know, regardless of your education?
I think when we were like in high school, we took every art class we could. We did all the art for the entire school, you know, the bulletin boards and the settings for the plays and all of that kind of thing. So we were, in fact, a lot of people couldn't tell us apart even in high school. We were the art editors of the yearbook and the class artists. and so we actually did things always together. And then at that point, we said, we got to learn to be by ourselves. So we went to different colleges. And my college, I was trained as an artist. And in her college, it was Rhode Island School of Design, which is a great place to get a professional training for graphics or some other interior design and graphics is what she did.
Mm-hmm. Were there certain things that you would do the same, even though you were far apart?
I think our love of color is something that, and I think our love of nature was that way. I mean, I think that was exactly like that.
So this is your final show at Waterstone Gallery. What is it about the gallery that you particularly like?
It is an artist-owned space, which in other ways you could say it's a co-op. We own the gallery. We run the gallery. We work the gallery. All of the work is done by the artists. Historically, we've been 15 people with very little turnover until recently. It's an opportunity to actually watch people watch it. Look at your art. Look at your artwork, and listen to what they have to say, and introduce yourself as the artist if you think it's a good idea, and if you don't, you don't. And you can see what I did a artwork. Some of those things, paintings with writing on it, and it looks like writing, mm-hmm. and people would read it, and they would come up with words. But they weren't words.
it was just scratches.
Yes, it was just like longhand writing, and it was and so it was fun to listen and see how they were responding. I think artists like to have people respond to their work, and you get to find that out. Mm-hmm. I think Waterstone is extremely professional. A lot of us have had a lot of professional experience before we became part of Waterstone, and it's a wonderful group of people. Mm-hmm. And the other thing for me was that I was able to have a show of my own, be the featured artist every year to 2 years, mm-hmm. and that is a great way of pushing yourself, because then you have to have a whole body of work new. Ready for the next show.
Is there a cap of 15 artists?
That's what we had for a long time. Right now, they're at 16. At 17 until the end of this month when I leave, and it'll be mm-hmm. 16.
How would they find somebody else then?
When we're losing somebody, we do publicize and let other artists know personally that we're looking for somebody else. Mm-hmm. There is a membership committee who takes website. You know, if you send a website and this committee feels like there's a good match, mm-hmm. and our work is very varied with different subject matter and different styles, but then. You actually bring work to the gallery, and we as a whole vote. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes depends upon your attitude, because some people work well in a group, and others make it kind of hard. And we've had a few of those.
Mm-hmm. So you did the books for 18 years. How does a place like that survive in the Pearl with Pearl rents?
A normal gallery, a private gallery, takes 50% when they make a sale. And our gallery, we take at this point, it's just going up next month, but 14% is what we take. And that's considerably less than 50%. But we also put money in every month, each one of us. So those two are our income.
That keeps the lights on.
That keeps the lights on. It keeps us paying the rent. We've been extremely conscientious about paying the rent on time, and our landlord likes us. I think that we originally were asked to rent that space because our members, a number of them, worked on Art in the Pearl and in the founding of Art in the Pearl, and the woman who owned the space at that time. She thought this was great, and she wanted us around.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Susan Johnson. Susan's show of oil bar paintings is at Waterstone Gallery now through December 29th. And Waterstone is at 424 Northwest 12th Avenue in the Pearl. Thank you so much for coming in, Susan.
My pleasure.
Hang him on my wall, and he walks over screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor a New Year's Eve Afrobeat and Salsa dance party with live performances from Palante and Jujuba in a benefit for Mercy Corps at the Red Rose Ballroom on Northeast Alberta and 19th on New Year's Eve, Tuesday, December 31st, from 9 p.m. till 1 a.m., and a salsa lesson at 8:30. Musical worlds converge when Nigerian Afrobeat band Jujuba and Afro-Cuban salsa and Latin band Palante bring the community out for this high-energy dance party to support the international relief work of Mercy Corps. The New Year's Eve celebration is at the Red Rose Ballroom on Northeast Alberta and 19th. For details, please go to kboo.fm and click on the New Year's Eve dance party link on the lower right side of the page.
You're listening to news headlines for December 24th on KBOO News. A bombing in northern Egypt killed at least 14 people and injured over 120 more early this morning. The bomb struck a police headquarters in the city of Mansoura shortly after 1 a.m. No one has taken responsibility for the bombing at present. The interim government has blamed the Muslim Brotherhood, which supported ousted Prime Minister Mohamed Morsi. The Muslim Brotherhood, however, has condemned the violence and called it a direct attack on the unity of the Egyptian people in a statement. In a statement on Sunday, the Islamist group, the Champions of Jerusalem, warned police officers and security forces to abandon their posts or they would have themselves to blame for the consequences.